You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Greetings. This is Quantum Leap Book Club. I'm Parisha, your host, and today I will be joined by my five co-hosts, and we have a lot to talk about. We're exploring Dr. Fred Alan Wolf's book, Mind into Matter. And today we're going to actually talk very much in depth about the particular chapters that we've looked at, and that would be 2 and 3. I really want you to understand the importance of the axioms. It is the formula to what we're going to discuss today with the axioms. So I'm asking my co-host to make sure you actually know the four axioms and discuss it as we begin discussing our material today. And I think I'm missing one co-host that I don't see, but we can start. We have Joyce Mullenhauer, who is a nurse and actually a homeopathic doctor at this point. And she practices now and teaching other nurses to actually become very, very competent with her beautiful experience. And we have Trina Cooper. And Trina is amazing. She's an entrepreneur. She actually has been a very vital point in her family's business, as well as many projects that she creates on the side and does a wide range of services to lift consciousness. Trina also has been very, very much involved just recently, as all of my co-hosts have, in actually an event of where we have been pursuing unity and spirituality. And that would be the Third World Parliament. Okay. Almost forgot that, right? But in the next tab, here's Rosemary Heyer. Rosemary is from Germany, and she's in Frankfurt, and she actually brings us way far. She gives us a reach way far across the oceans here. And she does interpreting and actually teaching young people English. Okay, she's well-traveled and has for many years and taken people onto sacred sites and in wonderful, creative, and very mystical places. Thank you, Rosemary, for being on. And there's Marianne Love. Marianne is a therapist, a psychotherapist in Melbourne, Australia. Again, across the waters we go, okay? And so right now, Marianne has actually participated in the Third World Parliament as well. And she's doing practice. She adds, like Joyce, she adds some of the very advanced studies of science into her treatments. What I find is when people actually get degrees and they get licensed into something, that kind of puts them in a box. And it's not easy for someone who's really dedicated to make change and make the difference, actually to work within the perimeters of those regulations and rules, and actually take people to the advanced level of their knowledge and what they know. And Geraldine, if she gets on, is actually an environmentalist engineer. She does a lot of working with the lands in Australia. She's from Sydney. And she actually helps reforest and take care of the landscapes that allow many of our natural creatures and relations to actually exist in a better and healthier place. Okay, so this week we're going to start and go back over chapter 4. You actually had gone over that last week on the show, and I felt that it's too important to brush through as fast as we did. When we're looking at inertia, we're looking at ourselves and the very, very obstacle that we must overcome. There's actually a part of our brain that gives us resistance. We have those conversations in our head where we're arguing with ourselves. Anybody ever do that? Okay. Everybody does that. Okay. You go, you make a decision. And what do you do immediately? You question the decision. Okay. If you see something and you actually have an inclination toward, you question the motive of that inclination. So it's nature. It's natural. It's us. So it isn't something that someone can say, well, I'm so advanced, I don't experience that, or I'm so smart, I don't have that, or better yet, I'm so intelligent, it doesn't exist. No, it does. And it's a physical little knob in the head that actually creates the vibration of that inertia, that resistance. And we're going to read today even further and find out how Professor Wolf actually looks at the fact that inertia is what makes things happen. The resistance that we have actually is what creates exactly what we have. So how many people listening to us, as well as my co-host, actually find that when you actually start, you make a decision and you start feeling the resistance, that you begin to question. I find so many spiritual students and so many spiritual seeking people, they'll make a decision, commitment to something, and then they have this resistance, which is natural, right? And then they begin to think, well, this is a signal. There's, you know, that my higher self or my higher consciousness is telling me there's something wrong here. No, it's just the opposite. Being the trickster that it is, it's telling you, go for it. You know, it's actually, the stronger the resistance, the bigger the outcome. So when we look at the fact, what does that make any sense? Well, we're in the field of duality, right? So contrast, everything's contrast, everything's opposite. One has to depend on the other. Well, so is resistance. Resistance takes the pulling away and the resistance of it to create the energy field that actually makes it materialize. It can't materialize without it. I often teach, and when I do tell people, when I go into dealing and teaching in a very native, basic way about resistance and the trickster and the whole point of inertia, okay, I give our beautiful sunny days the example. The reason we experience daytime on our planet is our Earth is resisting the ultraviolet rays of the sun. It is the Earth that gives us the sunshine. It is the combination of the resistance of the two forces that actually make us have these beautiful sunny days. So when do we think about that? Well, you experience that on every level in your body. The fact that you exhale actually forces the inhale. That's inertia. It's such a part of our life that we don't seem to give it the attention or the awareness, better yet, the awareness of that. And that's what I want you to do as we're looking through here. I would desire that you keep the four axioms in mind and that you know it. Not that you just heard of it or you could explain it or you could read it, but that you know it. Okay, and then that we go into this and actually deal with what inertia is. That you begin to see how very easy it is to manifest all the wonderful dreams, all the wonderful ideas, all the wonderful downloads. I mean, in most cases, we're being constantly guided to have where to go, what to do, and answers. And we're not perceiving that because we don't know how to deal with the inertia. Okay, so as we move forward, then I'm going to actually ask the co-host to begin to come into discussing what we have. And I sent out a particular schedule flow, if you guys got it, that we just there to actually share, you know, take some time and share some part of your conclusion, the coming and combining of what you have here. And Joyce, I think you're first on that list.
Yes, I am.
And by the way, Joyce, I'm talking to you a minute. You're always worried that you're lighting and you've been working on getting your lighting. You look great right now. I want to give you that compliment. You look great. The lighting is perfect where you're at and how you're doing it. And you're coming across with a beautiful smile. So, yeah, the solution. You found the solution.
I did. Yeah. Good news.
Just needed to tell you.
I love the questions that we're going to be responding to here today about inertia. The word inertia, to start with, I think is intriguing, that the root word inert actually means lacking any ability to move. So inertia is a pretty powerful force, and it's kind of a two-sided sword. We could say that it's one of our greatest gifts in life, and we can also say it's one of our greatest challenges in life. And grandmother's already touched on that, that it's a natural part of our existence to resist. So once we actually get aware of that gift, then how does it work? Well, without it, we wouldn't be born. We wouldn't have the butterflies come out of their chrysalises. Transformation and creation could not happen. So the bottom line to me on how does it work is, helping ourselves to start with, and then helping others just to change their perspective. That because they are feeling resistance, it's something to celebrate rather than to resist the resistance. So I think it's great. Now, how do we realize when we're in inertia?
Okay. That's good.
I think being aware and being willing to acknowledge that, okay, I've got this project that I want to take part in, but I'm feeling huge resistance. I don't know where to begin. It's not quite sure what my role is going to be. Well, the amazing thing is once you start, then things start to unfold. And for me, in preparing for the conference, I had an adventure. And I probably hit every resistance you could ever hit. Maybe I'll even write a story about it. Because the end result helped me grow big time. And I greatly appreciate it. So realizing inertia is a personal experience and really a personal journey once we really change our perspective. So how can I use it to assist life? Well, first of all, to assist myself, one of the words that I've been playing with as I was looking at these questions is the word procrastination. And I think we've gone in the wrong direction with all the guidelines that are out there about procrastination, because we tend to judge ourselves when we think we're procrastinating. Well, if we make that shift and realize it's resistance that we're dealing with and have a vision of where we're going and recognize that we can change our perspective, then I can see that that can be very powerful. How have I brought resistance into my life? Well, probably, I don't even know how many times I could even say, many, many times. I resisted going into nursing originally. I resisted moving to the United States originally. I resisted like all kinds of things. But in every case, when I look at it, those resistances led me to opening my life in such amazing ways. And I, with just answering these questions, I have gained a whole lot of insights about how I can talk now about inertia, how I can talk about resistance, because I am personalizing what the gift has been and can talk about it. So that's how I answered those questions.
Okay, very, very good. Thank you. Very, very good. I don't see, has Geraldine joined us? I don't see her on my screen. So if not, we'll just move on to Rosemary. Can you pick up from here?
So I would like to start with an example which is similar to what Joyce had shared, that I had a real complete blockage around deciding a topic or writing my profile for the World United event. And in Germany, we have a saying, you have a blank in front of your forehead. It's not a real nice translation, but that's what we say to someone who's completely blocked. And that's what I experienced. And that is basically resistance. But the interesting thing is that when I looked at the chapter 4 now, after experiencing that, that I did exactly what he was describing. I had to step one step back. I couldn't go on saying, oh, I have to figure out the topic, I have to figure out the topic, I have to figure out the topic. I had to step back and be aware of what is going on with me, what is present. And first of all, it was in a resistance, inertia. I was trying to create something new. And when you create something new, just like he says, it comes from nothing. It doesn't come from anything from the past. So I had to look in my past, and what came up was a real old belief that I might not be capable enough to do this whole thing. And once I was aware of that, it lost much of its charge because I've been working on that before. And just a few minutes later, someone was talking to me and said, you know, what you're really passionate about is this and this and this. When you talk about this, you get really excited. So just a few minutes after I had gone off that resistance, things start to get in the flow. So inertia is necessary to create because, in my view, it helps you to look back. It helps you to look back with a trickster standing and presenting me with my identity, my belief system, my story, my storyline, or how people have defined me. And in this chapter, he's speaking about creating from nothingness. And some of us are aware that the universe is actually existing mostly out of energy, out of nothingness. So it's, and he's actually saying that when we think in a material way, which means we are looking to create something from something, it's not new. It needs to come from the unknown, from the uncomfortableness Joyce and I share, to create something new. And that is, for me, what is to deal with resistance. And I have been resisting, just like Joyce, many things in my life. And as grandmother said, if you resist something really big, it comes out really big. And that happened to me then. And another thing I want to share is about how we go about creating, or how we call the desire to move, from chapter 3. And I think a really important part of me in creating is that you go into the motion. And the motion comes from allowing yourself to not know what the next step would be. Like even with that resistance, I didn't know how to get out of it. I was sharing with some people about back and forth, but I had a moment I didn't know. And I think it's that intuition, that stepping into the unknown, that's being in the not knowing, in the uncomfortableness of not knowing, where I started to move. So that is one of the statements, and one of the axioms of desire, of creating something. And the other one is about energy, feeling. I think for me, intuition and feeling is really the main two steps where I can get out of resistance, because my usual identity would not do that. My usual identity would go into thinking in time, or it would go into sensing space. So, but I think that what is really creating or helping me to go beyond resistance is to have the courage to step back and go into the intuition and the feeling. And I really got that from this example I just experienced and reading chapter 4 again, as you suggested. So I appreciate that you brought that up again. One thing I found really exciting, and maybe we can talk about that before in the discussion, I didn't quite completely understand that sentence he's saying on page 56 in chapter 4, where he says the universe comes into being when it becomes aware of rising resistance. So I thought, wow, for a moment, I thought it's a very powerful sentence, but I still can't make the fitting the dots together. So maybe that would be something to hear what you have to say about, or anyone else have to say about. So that's what I have to share for right now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Very, very good. Okay, we're going to move on now. And can we have Marianne Love there in Melbourne, Australia?
So inertia for me happens when I visualize something new, when I have the desire or something emerges from me that's different from anything that I've had before. And as soon as I start to visualize and see something different, have the desire for something different, then in the contrast of that, I become now aware of what was and what is already cellularly programmed into me and what my old thinking was. And that contrast actually gives me my life experience. And so I always know that I'm in it because it's uncomfortable, firstly, when I feel that vision that I'm having is something that, if I've decided it's out of reach, because it's the heaviness of my own neural pathways in my own brain that will actually give me this idea about whether I'm in a strong case of inertia or a lighter case of inertia. So if my thinking is very rigid, I'm in a heavy case of inertia at that point, because I'm programmed, like we all are, to continue to in the movement that we've been wired for. And if the wiring is very rigid, then we're basically going to experience a high level of resistance. But that means then once we achieve that vision, we've broken through masses of amounts of old programming and old feelings in the nervous system, and really made some internal shifts that can't be undone, because you can't know something. I mean, once you know something different, you are different. So then in a way for myself, the bigger the contrast, the bigger the changes within myself. and the more powerful. And if you can get by without listening to that little voice that tries to steer you off track, then and just stay hold to the vision and bring up the new feelings of what that vision would be and start to teach the nervous system that vision is a reality that you can live, then I think the inertia is less, the contrasts are less when you can fully immerse yourself into the vision that you're creating. And then the challenges are less. I think this is all our drama and our storylines, and we can make this big and dramatic, or we could make this playful and light. I think it depends a lot on our own attitudes as to how heavy the experience or sensation of inertia actually is. So I think some of the most, when I feel the most elated, I think it's when I've broken through the heaviest inertia. And I had that experience where I realized over time a development that I'd had, because many years ago when I was public speaking, I was literally like, if somebody had asked me, would you prefer to die or public speak? I really would have like had to seriously consider that maybe death would be an easier option at that time. I'm serious, because I was so petrified of public speaking. This week, I, you know, stepped into public speaking without a huge amount of anxiety that I used to have, and much easier than it used to be. And that was just a recognition for me that I'd broken through a huge amount of inertia that was in my system and can now flow more smoothly with public speaking. And it's worth it, like the peace that comes from knowing that you've overcome some heavy resistance in your own nervous system. It's worth it. It gives us the joy of our life experience. It's what makes it fun to be on the planet and to have a body and have all the resistance that we have in it, because of how much we can have fun overcoming it.
That's great. And the fact is like, especially for all of you that co-host with me, you're the importance of you learning to be very relaxed, or just at a level of competence, a level of confidence that you had when you're talking to people. Okay, you have messages, and they're the way that you deliver. Each one of us have a means and a way of how our vibration communicates into the field. And all of those are necessary. There is no one. They're all a collective and necessary. And you... it's like for all the years that all of you have actually been very, very much involved in consciousness and the lifting and the clearing of consciousness, okay? You have no way to help if you can the people, relating to them, actually being able to reach out and touch them with something you know. And I know that you're all learning that you know far more than most people. And we take it so for granted because of how we share with like-minded. It's very easy to get into that little box, put yourself in that little box, to where you think that everybody knows that. No, you have spent how much of your life exploring this, you know, let alone the purpose of it actually indwelling in your codes. So that you're beginning to be comfortable, like viewing all of you in the parliament over these past 4 or 5 days. Excellent. But these are not the same stronger. Each of you have been able to actually get in front of people and deliver your heart and be comfortable with that. So I'm very, very happy with you. I'm excited with seeing how that we actually become the teacher and the student. And it's perennial. We are perennial students and teachers. So it never goes away. I'm 80 this month, and I've been doing this for 60 years. It never, once you find that comfort of knowing you saw somebody's expression change from a frown to a smile, or just to see them, their face relax, you know that they have now, you willing to direct it to them, intentionally wanting to see life better for them. Even if you didn't open your beautiful mouths, your heart would talk for you. So this is actually the work you're in, and the reason we do this show and we do so many other things is that you are that messenger. And I'm so glad that you've decided to wear that messenger's face and be come out, get out here and help work it. And it's fantastic. You're all exciting. And the excitement is absolute exciting that we've inertia, very, very good. And you're all five files or five cases of success, because all of you come in terrified of this. I'm looking at you, Marianne, and I remember your first time standing in session. I mean, you talk to people all day, but when you had to look in a room and see a lot of people looking at you, I remember how nervous you were. And I realized that your stomach was showing. So you deliver your beginning and realize where you're in present. And you all need to feel very, very powerful these days, because you do have impact and you make people's lives different. You reward the very fact that they're spending time and space. Okay. I think, though, that out of what you've all shared, and I'm going to let Trina share, and Trina, if you can, in what you've determined you'd like to talk about, bring us back more to what Wolf is actually saying inertia is. In the beginning of chapter 4, there's at least like a couple of pages where he's actually trying to help us get a grasp on the word inertia, like put life to it, put action to it. And if you can, and bring some of that through, that would be great about this time, because we keep using the word, but I don't feel right now we have defined it for people who maybe have not ever read anything or understand inertia. Okay.
Yep. Great. So what is inertia? This particular chapter really helped me understand it a little bit more, especially the very beginning when he talked about Dalit, because the way he explained it was spirit comes into matter. Spirit coming in creates a movement, and that movement, the resistance to that movement, is Dalit, which is it's the resistance, it's natural. This is a property, inertia is a property of matter. Matter wants to stay kind of stuck, and then when spirit comes and moves into it, its response is it's going to try and hold. It doesn't want to change. It's comfortable where it's at. And what I found was really interesting is that based on, I mean, we have natural instinct, and then we also have the programming in our minds, in our brain, from past experience. So we've got those two things that are working with us as human beings, but we're constantly getting insights, or we're constantly, our hearts opening and saying, yes, I want to do this, or we're given opportunities. And immediately what ends up happening is that our body begins to go, oh no. And we just kind of stop. We start questioning it. So again, this is like spirit dropping in into us, into matter, opportunities dropping into us, into matter. It starts to create a movement, and immediately that natural instinct, that natural ability just stops us and says, wait, because basically, in a way, it's a protection for us to keep us safe, because it's comfortable where it's at. So some of the things that Dr. Wolf also said was that this is a key, like the first secret of alchemical creativity. Learn to become aware of the mind and body connection that goes on there. You need to begin to recognize when that excitement comes up, or the fear comes up with you, and it shows up in different ways. It shows up where you might feel a knot in your stomach, or you might get super excited, or you may clench your fist, or you might feel your jaw tighten. You've really got to begin to understand the signals that your body begins to show you. And it's not just in our own physical body. It could be in a group of people where you're working on a committee, and somebody brings in a great idea, and some of the people go, yeah, and other people in the group are immediately going, well, that's not going to work. We tried that once before. We can't, you know, it's not going to happen. We don't have the resources and all that. So sometimes I call it the kind of craziness that goes on, where, you know, those pictures, the cartoons where there's a little devil on one side, an angel on the other side on your shoulders, and they're talking back and forth to you. And you've got to be able to say, okay, what is it that I want? What is it that I'm going for? What am I looking for? And open yourself up to that. Open yourself up to the possibilities. For me, what I recognize in myself is sometimes I don't focus well when that resistance is coming up. Or sometimes my mind goes in a circle chatter. Procrastination is another big one. Really getting stuck in the minutiae of things instead of, you know, one of the best ways for me is like to take a breath. And what, and grandmother, what you've taught us, the stop change, when you notice, and you have to become aware, that's a key to this, the awareness that it's starting. And you need to say that, stop, let's change. Let's ground ourselves back in. Let's take a breath. Let's see what we're looking at. I remember a long time ago, like the way I brought this into my life, realizing that I didn't like what I was. I didn't like how quiet I had become. I remembered myself as being this joyous, open kid. And then over time, my experiences shut me down. So I started challenging myself. I decided the only way to get out of this is to create a new me and challenge it. So one of the trainings I went to, I needed to get on stage in a crazy costume and begin, I needed to sing, which was, speaking on stage is one thing, dancing on stage was one thing, but singing on stage, oh my God. So I get up there, and they had told me, sometimes the music doesn't work. So I got up on the stage, and all of a sudden, the guy goes, I'm so sorry, your music isn't working, you're going to have to do this a cappella. And I went, ah! So my first reaction, which is what he's talked about, you can fight, flight, freeze, those kinds of things. The first thing I really wanted to do was just step off the stage or hide. And then I thought to myself, nope, you came here for a reason. And I kept thinking, if I could just remember the first word, I can do this. So I picked the song True Colors. And I thought, oh, what is it? What is it? And it was like, you with your sad eyes, don't be discouraged, just realize. And as soon as I started to sing, it was like everybody in the room felt, could feel my heart, could feel how I was. And they all joined in and started singing. So that's the way this kind of works. When you pull back in the inertia, it's almost like a slingshot that creates that where you can just burst right back out again. And Dr. Fred, he says, we need to become aware each time we feel resistance rising inside of us. This is the key in order to like let go of the slingshot, is to recognize the patterns in yourself and how they show up for you and the energy it creates, and then push through it, just like burst through it. It's so exciting. Yeah, it's just so, it really is excitement. And one of the things I was taught was the energy of excitement and fear are basically the same thing. It's just what you do with it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm looking a little bit more for the technical base that he starts out with. And the whole thing that we have are constantly interacting with now, especially with the new sciences, is Fred points out very clearly on pages 1 and 2, what you're really having to get in touch with and aware of, okay, is mind and body. Actually understanding that science can't prove mind. Now, we can prove brain. We can go in any lab and we can even now tell you about what parts of the cauliflower that's in the head. We can pick out certain parts of it and actually show you all the inclinations or the activity from that. But what the alchemist or what the medicine person or the highly conscious person has to become in order to deal with the imaginal, okay? An imaginal is real. What we call reality is not, okay? So Fred goes through on the first couple of pages of chapter four, actually letting you see the fact that you have to have an awareness, some kind of a place of knowing in yourself, the difference between mind and body, and that there is an alienation of that to where we talk to the body. Well, what's talking to the body? Like, well, we say to the body, oh, get over it, or okay, you know, this. We actually talk, and you're given many examples in New Age and spiritual teachings that says, look in the mirror, talk to yourself, and tell yourself you love yourself, right? Well, what he says here is there's that delicate line between mind and the imaginal, and mind and body. And those are gateways. In my particular tradition, we see those as gates, and meaning that there is something that opens, okay, an opening. And that opening has to happen for you to ever have power to manifest. You know, when we read the scriptures and we read how all the prophets and how the healing process had, it's because they could actually shut off the environment and go in and find that delicate, invisible veil that separates mind and body. And it doesn't separate if you understand it's an emerging that's happening. And so he goes through that extensively on the first two pages to actually say it's actually the need to understand when mind is in action and when body is. And what many people have learned in studying the extended studies of consciousness is that most human beings are functioning in what we call mind-body or body-mind, okay? Well, body-mind means you totally listen to your body. You do not have the inclinations of the intuitive abilities that you have. You simply listen to the body. And the body has learned all kinds of tricks to pull your attention to just being physical and very limited to the sensory perception of just a body. Whereas when you are in mind, and like I said, scientists can't prove mind. It's like the wind. We can see its effects. We can actually see its outcome. But to actually say, here's what it looks like, can't do that yet. We will get closer to that as we keep reaching into studying the string theory and actually going deeper into quantum, even passing quantum into string, actually will bring a visibility for us to say, that's mind moving. Because right now what is evident is when we're measuring and working with that with labs and experimenting with that, there's sort of like a mist, almost a phantom that comes, and it will take many forms, and it does take forms. It's not just a blob. And so when he goes into this, he's saying at this point, you need to actually spend time, the quiet presence of maybe meditating and learning visualization. When do you know you have moved from being body conscious or mind body, okay, or body mind? When have you let go of the body now and you can become mind? Actually, that's what meditation is. Actually realizing that you move through that veil, and then you move into the imaginal. And most people are taught as children to stop talking to what you see, because they'll tell you that's just your imagination. That's imaging in action. That's what the word imagination means. And you're seeing something that you're putting into words that you see moving. And as children, their children are wide open to it unless they're actually nurtured to explain and talk to that. They then begin to shut it down more and more and more, which I feel is where every adult is. It's trying to reach beyond that now. Okay, so he deals very much. And I would say if you are really serious about changing and becoming an immediate effect in materialization, you really want to grasp what Fred puts in those two, three first pages, okay? So please go back and read that. But what he's saying here is that awareness has to be in the conflict or the resistance between mind, okay, and body. And it's there. Body wins out most of the time because you default and go right into giving in to the stress, to whatever the body's language is what you're going into. And so learning to just shut that off and knowing when that veil comes, an opportunity hits it, you go into the imaginal. And as some of you shared, music can do that, dance can do that. You know, any of the particular things that bring you into a more beauty way or more creative way will actually help you understand how you can then begin to control the inertia. Okay. And then I want you to go over to page 56 in your books. And like I said, I'm on my third book. I've used this book in teaching beginners for so long now that I bought five originally, and now I'm in the third one. I've actually given many away, but I've kept five, and now I'm in the third book because the pages become so nasty or the book fell apart. So I'm actually looking at starting a new book here today. But anyway, go on to page 50. It would be 55. And down about midway, there's a sentence that starts, "This is the first secret of alchemical creativity. Learn to become aware of the mind-body split and the point at which our unconscious mind influences our body." So what he's saying here is that we have everything, we're programmed. The neural net's programmed with all of your experiences, your beliefs, and all of everything's happened to you. Even stronger are the hardwired effects of something from the age of birth to 9. Okay, and then we begin to actually build bigger frames of those beliefs as our life goes along. So we live those beliefs. We actually let our life be based on those beliefs. Okay, and he says there then, to do this, we need to become aware each time we feel resistance arising within ourselves. And like I said, how many of you interpret resistance as a message that something's wrong? No, the message is pay attention. There's something happening here. Okay, very, very good. So do any of you have particular, I would really ask the people who are following and working with us on the club to actually spend time. If you ask me the importance of the various chapters, I would make, if you are beginning and you are not experienced the most powerful outcome to your efforts, then you have not mastered this. And until you master this, what you will make happen will be haphazard. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. How do you come to know exactly what to do and become the wizard that can move that energy? Everybody has it. No one is just born with the gift. It's all in-housed in these beautiful vessels that we call bodies. Okay. And so to learn this is to understand how you begin to actually lift consciousness, how you begin to heal, how you begin to have the capabilities of actually making the causation difference immediate. And so you go, it's very important that you understand those axioms, because Fred goes back through, if you can actually practice and make your four principles, and for me in Buddhism, they're the four noble truths, okay? And so if you just begin to realize axiom one is thinking about thinking, well, that's exactly what those first pages are. When you're thinking about thinking, what are you thinking about it? What are you looking at? What are you probing for? You know, what's your experience with it? Okay, when and in that, knowing you're exploring thinking, when are you aware that you're not any longer just focusing on the dominance of the body? That you have now moved into a very subtle but very powerful place, and that you've emerged into that. When are you aware of that? And what maybe there's been creative tools that you've learned. I can smell sage and I'm gone. I mean, 60 years, 70 years of knowing that sage was, you know, the entrance to a ceremony. When I walk into a store, like these beautiful New Age stores and these spiritual stores we have, and there's sage, an open basket of sage, I actually have to turn to whoever, or usually it's my husband, and say, you just need to kind of hold on to me, you know. And it's like my automatic key is move, go out, you know. So you really have triggers, very strong triggers that'll help you move that. So thinking about thinking, okay, and understanding what you're exploring in that. The second axiom is thinking about sensing. Okay, when we're sensing through the body, we are limited to the perceptiveness of the body. What is that? That's what? Taste, okay, seeing, hearing, smelling, touching. So you, what do you have, five? You have six senses. You used to be very strong in the sixth sense. We're not anymore. Due to technology and computers and the reliance on that, we've given up the sixth sense. There's very few people that have strong reality of sixth sense. Okay, but when we're thinking about sensing, you want to go back and understand Fred's point of what we're talking about with sensing. Okay, and you cannot rely on a body that actually wants to keep your attention, and you've trained it to be your opponent. You've trained it. So it knows how to bring you out and actually take you into chaos and back into uncertainty. It knows that. So when you're thinking about sensing, you have to then, when you've explored the thinking and you go to the sensing, then you begin the senses. When do you know you have passed through that veil? When do you know that? And at that point, how are you using it? Where are you taking it? Where is it going? And so again, learn the axioms. Okay, so this one's thinking about sensing. How do you know? How do you have the perception to know I'm now in that place? Okay. And then the third axiom is thinking about feeling. You know that all of the physics and quantum physics that you're learning says nothing can happen until you can feel it. Okay. Well, you know, if your body is numb to the hardwired system that you're working on, this is not easy. You're going to have to spend very, very constructive, directed time with this. This is where the workshops and the actual circle teachings and everything else, to where you can put the other part of your life away for a while and just focus and train. So you're in training. You are a prophet yourself in training. So thinking about feeling, how can you trust those feelings? Because here's where the battle is going to be. The body's going to fight for its survival of control over your life. Here's where that goes. So you really have to work with this one as well. So the feeling part about it. And then you come to four, which is intuition. Intuit. To go into it. Okay, use a little thing. Go into it. So what are you going into? If you have not learned how you actually survive and materialize in resistance and inertia, you're not really doing anything. You're hopefully doing it, and maybe your good intention sometimes will actually deliver an outcome, but not unless you have control and you know it. And that means knowing oneself. That's knowing what one's capabilities are and how your particular purpose is. That means your uniqueness, your powerful individuality that no one can do. That fingerprint says nobody can do what you do. Nobody. How much are you giving to that? How much are we learning and doing that? How much are we serving our whole life existence with that? Here's the keys. Take those axioms. Take this chapter. Put this into the neural net. And then see how you can walk about and change things. Just sitting here talking and getting ready to go into the show. All right, I had an immediate sense of endangerment to something very innocent. And then I looked out through the windshield and saw that there is a child, like probably 16, 17 months old, had actually wandered away from the group that he was with and was moving away. And I watched two people looking very nervous, checking out, looking to the left, the right, and the back, and the front, actually approaching the child. I had to move. So this is the outcome of this, that sensing and that feeling. It's you when you say, well, I don't know what that is. No, you want to know what that is. It's you saying, well, I don't see anything. Well, then get off your butt and go look. You know, go explore, find it. Trust yourself. It has to work, and it only works if you learn it and take it on. So taking to this chapter is real important, and working with it from whatever perspective you're pursuing your work. So there are lots of other points in the book that I've highlighted that we're not going to have time for. But one is actually going over to reviewing again what's on 56 and the example of the hand painting its moving hand and how we work. That's exactly the understanding of your body. Your left and right hemisphere, the left and right of your body is different. So how are you sensing that difference? Why? What is the necessity of that? Do you understand that? Do you understand that within the very thing you call your body, you're not in control of it? So the helping and knowing this is what's really important. I ask you, please spend time in chapter 4. Okay. Co-host, do you have some things you'd like to say in the closing? Anybody? Geraldine never got on with us? Okay. We'll have to check on her. Yes. Trina, you want to say something?
Yeah, one of the questions was, how do we, you know, how's it affecting the current life situation? And I thought about that. How's inertia actually impacting some of that? And I think we do see that resistance if we start looking at the world right now and what's going on in the world right now, because there are changes coming in. The energy's changing. Things are happening, and you see the different groups. Some are saying, you know, we need to keep it exactly the way it was, and other groups are resisting them, and then other groups are coming forward and saying, you know, we need to step out. So it's inside of us. It's that micro, but it's also in the macro. And if we really sit back, it's flowing in nature everywhere. And I do believe that awareness and observing will give us a lot of insights on how to walk into this to create changes, both in ourself, you know, really tapping into the awareness of where we are in those four axioms, what's going on with us. But also as we move about in the world, it's the same thing. Can we observe? Can we be aware? Can we see how the dynamics are playing? And it will help us come forward and have an impact in the world when we really connect with what resonates and what we feel is going on. So it's not just inside of us. It's watching all of nature, watching all of humanity and how they're dealing with things right at this time. So it's really, it's amazing when you start tapping into this, how inertia is playing on a grand scale.
Okay, very good. I'm going to have to disagree with that, Trina. I believe it's your focusing on the outside that it never allows the inside to become powerful. I know what I've done in myself, and then therefore I know its effects. So I don't look out to see what's going on in the world. I can sense it and I feel it. I can feel the sadness, the pain. Then I deal with it inside and take care of it. That's how you heal. So I would caution, while there's for you, whatever your experience of how you're using that, I'm not trying to tell you to change that, but I'm saying I would discourage people from looking out and thinking you have to do anything in the world. No, we are here to develop this particular presence to be earth keepers. We are here in a form, helping that form become, it will evolve to where it is the keepers, and the keepers will keep this planet in complete harmony. So we're actually training the organic mass of a body to actually have the consciousness that we're seeding and doing. And as long as we're reacting to the outer world, you'll never get there. The chaos of the outer world is nothing but chaos. And the only time it'll ever make sense is when your inner chaos has been settled and you're focused. Okay, I do good six, anywhere from 4 to maybe 9 hours of meditation a day. And my world is what I meditate on. My world, what I see, what I dream, what I put into that world. And I constantly see that responded to me. Like the child, you know, my whole thing is protecting the innocence of the children. So, of course, if I'm in a 100-mile radius or whatever, I'm going to pick up on that. So be aware that your world or your environment is what is happening in you, and you're attracting that. if we start feeling victim, we say it's because of what's out there. No, what's in here creates the victim. And whatever we're looking at, we need to not focus on the craziness out there or the insanity out there. What's the craziness in here and the insanity in here? Because this body is for you to overcome. This body is for you to take control of. Your mind is to show you that you have created the perfect harmony within the body. And it's when we let the outside in that we get just totally disinterested, disconnected, and whatever. As Buddha has said, if along the path you should find me, you know, slay me. He's saying the Buddha you're looking for is within you, not what's without you. So I would just add a little caution to that, Trina. Okay.
Waito, I appreciate that sharing.
Okay. Anyone else have something you would like to share in conclusion of this chapter? Rosemary?
At the end, he offers a solution, so to speak, while he speaks about breaking from the separation or the feeling of separation, which means like letting go of your identity. And I understand that from the world event and all the things which are happening, that that is really the main thing. We need to go beyond our preconceived realities and thoughts, what the other cultures and people and groups and who are they and what are they thinking and where do they come from? And go always back to what you call harmony, go back to the idea that we are one. And in diversity, in enrichment, yes, but we are one and there's no separation. There's no distance between me and the person who's screaming on the street. It's just one. And I can access it through myself inside of me. So,
okay, very, very good. And I'd like to have you share when we come on next week, actually share the question I'm going to ask you. At what point in all of that oneness do we actually acknowledge the power of us being individual to ourself and of sole purpose that no one else can have? So when and I'm hearing a lot of oneness stuff. I really am. Everywhere you're hearing oneness. And I listen to that and I understand in myself then, you know, how much my whole place to go with that is I hear that and I realize I have resistance to it. Why? And it's because at this point, when we go into oneness, we begin to fade into a big bowl of jello. Okay. And I want to know where the piece that I am is in that, because I have to be responsible to that. I have to respond and put action to that. So when we talk about the oneness, and I've watched everybody that's talking about it, and I go into what I do in the field and can see thought and the pictures of that, and they have none. They have none. Okay, so we and you and I and all of us, where are we at with this oneness that we're talking about? The oneness that I know about in science says that at the very smallest element of us, the very smallest string theory of us, the smallest of anything physically measurable of us. Okay, we're going that deep into the we, the what, the I. Okay, and in that, how do we see our individuality? There is power in your individuality. You have been specifically coded and in-housed like a powerful computer with every app, every program that it needs. But you're still asking questions. So how solid, how basic, how real are the programs and the actual inside workings of the computer? If you don't have the answer of why have you been particularly in-housed with certain apps and certain particular programs, and that learning of ourself is the only reason we're in life. Learning of who you are is the only purpose you have. Because you are here to implant and seed that in the evolution of humanity. So the work that we do is not to go out and save the world. It's to save and look into yourself, save what you have been given, what you have been trusted with, and what we are here to be and experience. And so where's the individuality in that oneness? And I trust you, Rosemary. I know you'll go deep and find that. Come back with actually sharing first thing that we go out, that you're actually bringing back a thought, a deep thought on that, okay? Where is our individuality? Because you're extremely important. What is the message that I hope you all repeat that you and I share? What? You matter. You make a difference. And you count. Okay? How is that? That's because you're individual of the purpose you're here with. And the oneness of that is such a far in-depth place that we can go, and we'll get there. We will evolve humanity to get there. As we each do our own inner development and our own journey. And to realize that the masters and the prophets and whoever we call our wisdom keepers have left such a fertile field in the intuitive realm, and you can't get to it because you're not looking at these axioms and you're not understanding inertia. It is a rich field. It is a huge grocery store with everything you could possibly want. It's a department store with every decor that you could ever dream. Get there. And you have to make that an individual journey. Okay. I love you all very much. It's so happy to be back with all the travels and the running around. I want to commend the fact that you have been doing fantastic jobs with the show. And I want you to know that in my heart, even though in that hour I'm not present with you, I am following every vibration you're sending out, and it's beautiful, okay? And I say to all of you who are listening to our chatter and us going on, may you live fully the very gift of life that you've been given. And may we know that just simply a smile is worth eons, eons of time. So smile, make sure that you beam your love and your light out to the world. Oh, very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.